The following ordination ceremony was officiated by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery.
Good morning, everyone. So this morning we're doing a tokudo, a novice ordination for Taikyo and Hokyu. So within the Buddhist tradition, there are two main paths for a practitioner. One is the life of a monastic, an ordained monastic, and the other is the life of a lay practitioner, a home dweller. And this has been true since the time of the Buddha. And for much of the history of Buddhism, the monastic community, let me say it this way, the monastic community has been very strong and a sort of dominant part of the tradition. Although lay practice has been present since the beginning, those two groups, in a sense of the Sangha, have been interdependent, codependent, really. And that continues down to our time. These days, in the West, the sort of role or numbers of the lay practitioner, lay practice, Sangha, is much larger than the monastic community. There are even teachers who wonder if monastic tradition will continue into the future. We are doing our part, and my teacher felt, and I feel, that, and I'm not alone in this, but that the monastic tradition is an essential part of the Buddha Dharma, and for a number of reasons, one of which is that it offers a path for those who feel drawn, as Dharmaroshi used to say, who feel that spiritual imperative, to express that imperative in this particular way, to give their whole life to the Dharma, which is a different kind of life by purpose, by design. So for students who feel, and there are many people who practice here and come through here, spend time here, who feel drawn in different ways to the monastic life. There might be certain elements of it that they're drawn to, or the life itself. And sometimes they just don't have the opportunity to really discern that because they've made choices in their life that require them to be a home dweller practitioner. But the path that we have and have had in place for a long time, since close to the beginning, is that there is a path that can lead to full ordination, which is a lifetime commitment to live one's life as a monastic within this Sangha. And we call that path a path of discernment. And discernment, I looked it up because I'd never actually done that before. Never too late. It means to have insight. I mean, the sort of classical, traditional understanding or the formal understanding is to have insight into the heart and to come into contact with one's innermost, which is very much what this process of monastic discernment is about, which Taikyo and Hokyu have been in the midst of for a number of years, and this is another step in that process. From a Christian perspective, it also means to have perception in absence of judgment, which is kind of interesting. In other words, to be perceiving something in a different way, right? That is not just an analytical process, and that is moving one towards a spiritual direction and understanding, which is very much how we are using that term here. And so, for students who are so drawn, it means practicing, beginning to practice, study, at some point to become a formal student, to receive the precepts. We had a precept ceremony last weekend. And then if they want to pursue this path of discernment, they would then come into residency. So they begin the experience of living the life so that the experience of discernment is from within. It's not sitting outside and contemplating what would that be like. It's living it. But it's living it in stages. And so first the person comes in, they're a lay student, and they're just in residence. And then they would do a year of residence, and then they would, if they want to continue, they would do a second year of residence. And at some point, they would ask to become a postulant, which is the stage that they will both be stepping out of today. And the postulant is still a lay student, so they're not taking any vows. They have not making any formal commitment. What the postulancy is really saying is, my interest is continuing, and I want to continue to develop this. I want to explore this further because things are pointing in that direction for me, and I have not clear about it, but I want to get clear about it. And so they take that step. They put on the robe of a postulant, which is very similar to the lay robe, but it's black. And so they begin in another very tangible way to experience themselves and be experienced as now part of the monastic community. And that changes things, right? Even though it's just an external change, what's really changing is what's internal, because it's getting more real. They're also just spending more time here. And so this is becoming more and more their lived experience, and whatever they stepped away from in their lay life is becoming a little bit more removed. And for some of what's happening is they might be spending down money that they came in with, so that they're beginning to move towards that experience and that vow of simplicity. And so then they spend at least a year within that period of postulancy, and they're part of the monastic community, which means the things that the monastics do together, they're a part of. So they are starting to also experience that community, this community of monastics. And so because that really becomes one's family, one's intimate family, with embedded within the larger family of the Sangha, and including their own blood family. But their day-to-day experience is here. As my mother said once years ago when she was here for a celebration that we were doing and talking to lots of students and just seeing me here sort of in my life, she came up to me at one point and said, "These people know you much more than I do now," which was, you know, a little painful for both of us, but it was true, right? Because my lived experience and relationships are here, and that's part of what the monastic life is about. And so then at this point, then the postulant can ask to take novice vows, to become a novice. So this is an ordination, and this is traditional. And even postulancy had its place within, I believe, Chinese Buddhism, Chan. Dada Roshi sort of borrowed that from the Western tradition of monasticism. But novice ordination is traditional. That's how it would normally begin, and still is, where there are vows that are taken, but they're provisional, right? They're not life vows. They're vows to be practiced and investigated and lived for some period of time that leads to a final discernment, a final resolution. And so the whole point of this path is to move towards some clarity about what one's life is going to be within the Buddha Dharma. And so the result of this can be successfully that the student decides to take full ordination and make their life as a monastic, or to successfully move back into lay practice. Because their discernment is, after all has happened, that they want to return and make their life there. And I see that as a successful completion of that process. Because it really is and needs to be open from the beginning all the way through. And even when a student may feel like they have already decided as a postulant or novice, I keep saying, don't do that. Keep it open, Right? Keep it open in your mind so that the discernment is really genuine and it's honest. They're really investigating any things that might be pulling at them, that might be seem to be in conflict or might to be at odds with making this their life. Because then we have to work through that. We have to see, can I let that go? Right? And joyfully make that choice. Or is that desire so strong in me and so persistent that I need to step away and return? And so this is another important part of that process. Okay. And I think it's such an important opportunity because it's, you know, there are many important decisions we have to make in our lives in which we have to really reflect and consider. But we don't always do that. Sometimes we make very significant decisions without a lot of reflection for various reasons. Or we may reflect for some period of time, but this period of discernment is quite sustained, right? It happens over a number of years. And it's quite amazing, really, to go through that process, to be part of that process. Because as I said last week, you know, making a commitment like this, it is a bit of madness, you know, to decide like marriage, you know, that's a bit of madness. You know, to devote one's whole life to live with another person, you don't know what's going to happen next. You don't know where this is going. And that's the vow. Exactly. And so a monastic makes this leap. They don't know what's in store. Right? And that's the vow. That's the power of it, the beauty of it. And that's also why the discernment is so important. And so first they will do bows to the Buddha, their original teacher, who not only began the Buddhist tradition, but began the path of the monastic. And then they will go into the Buddha hall and bow to in the direction of their parents. And this is, again, to recognize and express gratitude for the various lineages, the various streams that make it possible for us to be here today, for them to be here today. So the Buddha, their parents, giving them life, and then finally they'll do a bow to their ordination teacher, which is myself in their case. Because without each of these, we could not do this. And that expression, that recognition, that expression of gratitude is such an important part of Buddhist practice because it brings us in, it makes vivid and real our mutuality, our mutual relation, our mutual dependence. And the monastic life is a very tangible expression of our mutual dependence upon each other. And it makes it very real of how we are dependent upon each other. And that's why those two aspects of the Sangha are so important. That we couldn't be here, the monastics couldn't be here without the lay Sangha. And for the lay Sangha, the monastery couldn't be here without the monastics. And so we not only need each other, but we become each other. Because we just did a Jikai ceremony last week, which many of you were here for, I'm not going to speak a lot about this next section, where the ordination traditionally is the taking of the Bodhisattva precepts. In the beginning, it was taking refuge in the three treasures. That's how the Buddha originally began ordaining monastics. And then it grew on from there. But in the Mahayana tradition, it's the receiving the Bodhisattva precepts. Dada Roshi added the five monastic vows. So what I want to do is we'll just go through the traditional part and let it speak for itself. And then I'll say more about the monastic vows when we get to that. And so first we'll do the invocation of the three treasures. Because without the three treasures, there is no Buddha Dharma, and there is no monastic life. Everyone, please, Gassho. Namo jipo butsu namo jipo ho namo jipo so namo hanshi shakyamuni butsu namo daizi dai hi kyu ku kanze on bo sa namo dajin fugen bo sa namo dashin manjushri bo sa namo koso joyo daishi namo toiso josa daishi namo riki daiso shibo satsu. Be one with the Buddha in the 10 directions. Be one with the Dharma in the 10 directions. Be one with the Sangha in the 10 directions. Be one with our original teacher, Shakyamuni Buddha. Be one with the great, compassionate Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. Be one with the great, wise Samantabhadra Bodhisattva. Be one with the great, wise Manjushri Bodhisattva. Be one with Koso Joyodaishi. Be one with Taiso Josaidaishi. Be one with the successive great ancestors. Namu jipo butsu namu jipo ho namu jipo so namu hanshi shakyamuni butsu namu daizi dai hi kyu ku kanze on bo sa namu daijin fugen bo sa namu rijin daishin manjushri bo sa namu koso joyo daishi namu taiso josai daishi namu riki daiso shi bo satsu. And now, in full ordination, there is the shaving of the head, which happens the night before with the monastics, and a lock of hair is left, which represents the top knot of the Buddha that he shorn himself on the night that he left his worldly life. And so within the tradition, there is the practice of shaving the head, which is a way of practicing non-attachment, because that hair just keeps growing back, and so it is an ongoing practice. And it's a liturgy. It's an ongoing liturgy which reminds us of our vows. And it is also doing that in a way that is very personal, right? Because it's relating directly to our appearance, our face. Our hair is a big part of that. And so it's a way of tangibly practicing that release. And so that's in full ordination. So today, I will just take a lock of your hair as an expression of your intention to continue to pursue this path of discernment, and to resolve that in the way that you will. And so... And this lock is buried at the foot of a tree to give life. So may I remove a lock of your hair? It doesn't want to come off. Okay. So next is the Gatha of Atonement, which we'll repeat three times, and everyone is invited to join in the Gatha of Atonement. Please, Gosho. All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Born of my body, mouth, and thought. Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
All evil karma ever committed by me since of old.
On account of my beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. My body, mouth, and thought.
Born in my body, mouth, and thought.
Now I atone for it all.
Now I atone for it all.
Shasui is an expression that there is one mind. Now we'll take refuge in the three treasures. So here we take, you're receiving the Bodhisattva precepts. Although you've done this before, years ago, you did it as a lay practitioner. So now you take refuge as an ordinate part of your ordination. Now, again, as a monastic. So please, Gosho. And we'll do this, I'll do this twice in Japanese and once in English, in which there'll be call and answer. Namukie butsu namukie ho namukie so kie butsu mujo san kie ho riji san kie so wago san kie bukyo kie hokyo kie so kyo. I take refuge in the Buddha.
I take refuge in the Dharma.
I take refuge in the Sangha.
I take refuge in the Buddha, the incomparably honored one.
I take refuge in the Dharma, honorable for its purity.
I take refuge in the Sangha, honorable for its harmony.
I have taken refuge in the Buddha.
I have taken refuge in the Dharma.
I have taken refuge in the Sangha. Namukie butsu namukie ho namukie so kie butsu mujo san kie o riji san kie so wago san kie bukyo kie hokyo kie so kyo. And now the precepts, the Bodhisattva precepts. So, Shoki. The first of the pure precepts is to not create evil. Not creating evil is the abiding place of all Buddhas. It is the source of all Buddhas. Will you maintain this?
I vow to not create evil.
The second pure precept is to practice good. This is the Dharma of Samyak Sambodhi, perfect, unexcelled enlightenment. This is the way of all Buddhas. This is a way of being. Practice good. Will you maintain this?
I vow to practice good.
And the third pure precept is actualize good for others. The life of the monastic is a life of a bodhisattva. It is the bodhisattva path, actualizing good for others. This is to transcend the profane and to go beyond the holy. This is to liberate oneself and others. Actualize good for others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize good for others.
You know, one of the things that this highlights is that when we speak about basic teachings, the teachings that we're introduced to in the very beginning or in the early years of practice, the reason that we speak of them as basic is because they're fundamental, they're foundational. They're the path. And because of that, we need to continually renew them. You know, returning again and again and again to teachings, to practices, is the religious life. As a monastic or a lay practitioner. And to do that without it becoming repetitive, to do that without it becoming dead, is the life, is the religious life. And so, in taking these precepts again, take them again. Receive them again. Commit to them again. The 10 grave precepts, to affirm life and not kill, to devote yourself to non-harming. Life is non-killing, Dogen said. The seed of Buddha continuously grows. Maintain the wisdom life of Buddha. Do not kill life. Do not kill that seed of Buddha which continuously grows. Affirm life, do not kill. Will you maintain this?
I vow to affirm life. I will not kill.
Be giving. Do not steal. The monastic life is a life of non-attachment in body, mind, and thought, and words. Dogen said, the mind and externals are just thus. The gate of liberation is open. Why does he say this in relation to non-stealing? The mind and externals are just thus. The gate of liberation is always open. Be giving, do not steal. Will you maintain this?
I vow to be giving, I will not steal.
To honor the body, the whole person, the whole Buddha, do not misuse sexuality. The three wheels of body, mouth, and mind, of greed, anger, and delusion, are pure and clean. Nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Within the realm of desires, nothing is desired. Go the same way as the Buddha. Honor the body, do not misuse sexuality. Will you maintain this?
I vow to honor the body. I will not misuse sexuality.
To manifest truth and not lie, the whole of this path, all the way through, is about turning towards what's real, turning towards what's true, and having the courage to do so again and again. And to know what is true and what is not true. The Dharma wheel unceasingly turns and there is neither excess nor incompleteness. Sweet dew permeates the universe. Gain the essence and realize the truth. Manifest truth, do not lie. Will you maintain this?
I vow to manifest truth. I will not lie.
Proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. The mind is your temple. It is your universe. It is your confinement and it is your liberation. There is nothing that is not this mind. The mind is originally pure and clear. It is Buddha mind. Do not let it become cloudy. Do not be defiled. Proceed clearly. Do not cloud the mind. Will you maintain this?
I vow to proceed clearly. I will not cloud the mind.
See the perfection, do not speak of others' errors and faults. In the midst of the Buddha Dharma, we are the same way, the same Dharma, the same realization, the same practice, the same body, the same mind, the same delusion, the same enlightenment. Do not speak of others' errors and faults. Do not destroy the way. See the perfection, do not speak of others' errors and faults. Will you maintain this?
I vow to see the perfection. I will not speak of others' errors and faults.
Realize self and other is one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. Because we have a monastic path and a lay path, because we have black robes and gray robes and white robes, there is always the possibility for us to establish high and low, worthy and unworthy, superior and inferior. The robe does not do it. The color does not do it. It's the mind. And it is a tyranny. And it is injury. To free ourselves of this, Dogen says, Buddhas and ancestors realize the absolute emptiness and realize the whole earth. When the great body is manifested, there is neither inside or outside. When the Dharma body is manifested, there's no square inch upon which you can stand. Realize self and other is one. Do not elevate the self and blame others. Will you maintain this?
I vow to realize self and other is one. I will not elevate the self and blame others.
Give generously. Do not be withholding. To realize within a life of selflessness, the abundance. One phrase, one verse, 10,000 forms, 100 grasses, one Dharma, one realization, all Buddhas, all ancestors, one day, one task, one responsibility, one question. Since the beginning, there never has been anything to withhold. Give generously, do not be withholding. Will you maintain this?
I vow to give generously. I will not be withholding.
To actualize harmony, to not be angry, to encounter the dragon of anger and to understand it, to know it intimately, in a sense to tame it provisionally, but to go further than that, to understand anger in its roots. Because when we understand anger in its roots, we're at the heart of being. It is not regressing, it is not advancing, it is not real, it is not unreal. There is an illuminated cloud ocean, there is an ornamented cloud ocean. Don't deny it, and don't indulge it. Actualize harmony, do not be angry. Will you maintain this?
I vow to actualize harmony, I will not be angry.
Experience the intimacy of things does not defile the three treasures. When we struggle, when we are frustrated, angry, we begin to step away from Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Because that's our habit. We externalize. We look for something, someone. And this is a vow to live this commitment from within. To continue to return to the vows, to the commitments, over and over and over again, and work it out from there. Work it out from that place of love, really, which holds everything. Experience the intimacy of things, do not defile the three treasures. Will you maintain this?
I vow to experience the intimacy of things. I will not defile the three treasures.
You'll remember it when it's happening. And now the monastic vows. So why don't you say, I'm going to say a little bit about each of these. So Dada Roshi, in being committed to developing a monastic community, in this time and place, and having grown up as within the Catholic Church and being very much influenced by that, but also then coming to life within Buddha Dharma, really made a study of monasticism and monastic lives and monastic paths as a way of informing his own decision-making processes. It's one of the reasons we had a very close relationship with Holy Cross Monastery, an Episcopal monastery not far from here, and we studied, actually, their beginnings as developing a monastic community within the U.S., because he felt like they were dealing with a lot of the same things that he was examining. And so these vows, these monastic vows, were the fruit, the result of that very careful, considered process that he went through, that he gave to us. And so the vow of simplicity is recognizing that there are certain forces within us, everyone, monastic, lay, Buddhist, non-Buddhist, that are dominant forces, that are forces within ourself and forces within our society. The reason there are forces within our society is because there are forces within ourselves. The reason we get hooked by things outside of ourselves is because the seeds are within us. And so he thought to establish a healthy and genuine and a deep running monastic life, we have to deal with those forces. Right? And so the vow of simplicity is that. It deals with it on a material level, because monastics, and here you're vowing to develop this vow. And so moving towards, in full ordination, the release of any accumulated wealth, present or incoming, that might be a result of inheritance or gifts or whatever they might be, and really living communally, living as a community where we support each other. But it's also the most important part is the internal part of it, which is recognizing that, you know, living in a society which is so increasingly inundated with information and speed and volume and objects and imagery and media and things, that in that we begin to become, we're more and more distanced from the wonder of simplicity, from the wonder of this immediate moment, which is the life force in every monastic religious life, which is why this vow is present within almost every practice-based religious tradition. And as a monastic, in a sense, we are devoting our lives to that, and in a certain sense are hopefully providing examples and are being guardians of this ancient path, this mystic path of silence and stillness and simplicity, and finding our joy and our fulfillment and our satisfaction and our wisdom in that mystic simplicity, the unadorned, uncontrived. And to appreciate that simplicity is not simplistic or naive or disregarding, but it's understanding that within renunciation, which is a freely offered release of what you could have, but it's freely giving that away so that you can, in a sense, have a more open, spacious field within which to play. This vow of simplicity is grounded, it's alive, it's very aware. And so it is a vow to not accumulate wealth, to be supported by the Sangha. I remember my father saying to me, that just doesn't sound like a good idea. He said, it sounds like it puts you, it makes you dependent on the community. I said, Dad, that's exactly the point. And he said, how is that a good thing? Right? Which is a very understandable perspective, right? To be dependent in that way makes us vulnerable, exactly. But it makes us mutually vulnerable. And it really just makes clear what's happening all the time, what's always true. But we're staking our lives on it. And so to be supported by the Sangha, to give away wealth that we might receive, and within that vow of simplicity, to be humble, to practice humility, as it says in the Metta Sutra, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in your ways. The monastic life is one of simplicity. Will you develop a vow of simplicity? Shukhi.
I vow to develop a life of simplicity.
Next is the vow of stability. So it's often said within Buddhism by teachers that a spiritual life is a disciplined life. And what that means is really a committed life. And what that means is that we have to have reflected on and become clear about what is important, which is a really important thing to do in our life. What is important? And to then commit ourselves to that. And then follow through on that commitment. And that's however, wherever we find our lives. That's just a good way of living a life. And so this discernment process is exactly that. It is reflecting on and really trying to be clear what is important to you in this life, for you to, this is one life is what you have. That much you know. And so how do you need to fulfill this life? What is that path that is going to be most fulfilling to you? And so practicing stability means within your vows, within your thoughts, within your emotions, within your physicality, within your relationships. It really means to move towards a life that is stable, because within that, things are less cluttered. There are less obstacles and obstructions. The way is clear and open in front of you. And so it means within the ups and downs, the highs and lows, that you practice that vow of stability. You find it, not in a contrived way, not in a forced way. You find your way back to stability. You take refuge. You find your seat again. And in that way, we learn a great, great deal about many things. We learn how to live this life. And so it also, this vow also includes that are one's primary, the big decisions in our lives, your work, children, family, relationships, travel, whatever are those big items in a person's life, have to be considered and worked out. Some of those, many of those, the energies of many of those can be fulfilled within the monastic life. Will that fulfill you? Where do you find your satisfaction and fulfillment? Because this life is to be joyful, right? I mean, that's part of the discernment process, is do we find ourselves thriving and being happy, you know, finding fulfillment in this life? And so for the monastic, the work is in the Dharma. It's within the order. That's where our work is. Our family is our noble friends, our spiritual friends. We relinquish having children, or if we have children, we wait until they're independent before we ordain. And we make those choices freely. That's really important. If it's also relating to relationships, so practicing within a couple or within as a solitary monastic as part of that discernment. And so within a vast and boundless unknowing, to be committed and unambiguous about your life is a vow of stability. The monastic life is one of stability. Will you develop a vow of stability?
I vow to develop a life of stability.
You know, it's also important to appreciate that in these vows, it's not that Taikyo and Hokyu begin practicing these today. Living here, living this life, these vows are in happening. I mean, this is really what practice is. And lay students practice these in their own way, but they have a particular expression as monastics. Next is the vow of service. And so there's so many ways to live a life. There's so many ways to place ourselves in relationship to everything. And we live in a time that kind of cherishes selfishness. You know, that is pretty enthralled with self-centeredness. At so many levels, we see this, where the kind of enshrining of putting oneself before others. And And so to within that, those strong currents, to choose to dedicate, make our lives and our life's fulfillment in service to others. And then to spend the rest of our lives exploring, examining, what is that? And doing it. And so it's really, in a sense, reclaiming our basic nature, which is giving. Our basic nature is generous within the right internal and external conditions. And this is about freeing ourselves of being so dependent upon the external conditions and awakening the heart of that within us so that our basic state is one of generosity and service. And so to let our life be one offering to every creature, to every person, to situations, which really means a life that's freed from the confinement of a grasping of self-concern. And to see if that is expressing your deepest yearning, your deepest desire. And to not limit that. So it is a vow of service to your teacher, to the teachers, to your seniors, your monastic community, to the Sangha. But it also means to strangers, to people you'll never meet, to inanimate objects. It's just a way of being. And to realize and to really investigate and realize, where does that seem to put you in conflict? When are the moments when giving seems to be in conflict with what you need? And to work that out, to really understand that generosity is never in conflict by nature. So when that seems to be in conflict, serving others, serving ourselves, how do we resolve that duality? So to live in service is really simply that. It's to bow, to give. The monastic life is one of service. Will you develop a vow of service?
I vow to develop a life of service.
Next is a vow of selflessness, which is the very heart and lifeblood of the Buddha Dharma. It's the heart of being itself. It's prajnaparamita, it's karuna, it's upaya, skillful means. And so this vow is to live this in your thoughts, words, and actions, in your relationships, in your solitude, in every form of practice, to dedicate yourself to a vow of selflessness and to realize, what is that? To really understand that deeply and to understand it experientially. The monastic life is one of selflessness. Will you develop a vow of selflessness?
I vow to develop a life of selflessness.
The fifth monastic vow is to live the Buddha's way. So the Buddha lived in a very different time and place. And we also are part of the great Mahayana tradition. And so this is to have great reverence and respect for the original and the many wisdom traditions of Buddhism, and to really examine what is the Buddha's way, not the Buddha way, but the Buddha's way, and to make that a point of study and a point of bringing forth within yourself, to follow the ways of our ancestors. But to do that today, how do you do that today? How do you do that here? The monastic life is in accord with the Buddha's way. Will you develop a vow to live the Buddha's way?
I vow to develop the life of the Buddha's way.
You vow to live the Buddha's, develop the, a vow to live the Buddha's way.
I vow to develop a life of living the Buddha's way.
Okay, one more time. Will you develop a vow to live the Buddha's way?
I will develop a vow to live the Buddha's way.
Okay. The 16 precepts, the three treasures, the pure precepts and the 10 grave precepts were handed down by Shakyamuni Buddha to me, and I give them to you. The five monastic vows were given to me by my teacher, Dada Roshi, and I give them to you. Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you maintain them well?
I will.
Will you really maintain them well?
I will.
Everyone, please, Gosho.
When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha. When sentient beings receive the sila, they enter the realm of the Buddhas, which is none other than the great enlightenment. Truly, they are the children of the Buddha.
The kroma, the Buddha's robe. That is quite long. Yeah, we'll have to do something about that. Buddha's robe. So this is the original raksu that Taikyo and Hokyu sewed when they received the precepts. If they go to full ordination, then they'll sew a new ordination raksu. List of the ancestors. Mountains and rivers order. This is to certify that Suzanne Taikyo Gilman, having fulfilled the novitiate training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on the 17th day of November 2019 received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the novitiate vows, lineage chart, raksu, and the monastic robe. Buddha's robe. Just take that. Bow. The Buddha's robe. And in addition to the raksu, if they go to full ordination, they would receive the okesa, which is the more formal robe. This robe, which really goes directly back to the time of the Buddha. List of the ancestors. This is to certify that J.L. Hokyu Aronson, having fulfilled the novitiate training requirements of the Mountains and Rivers Order, has on the 17th day of November 2019 received the 16 precepts of the Buddha Way, the novitiate vows, the lineage chart, the raksu, and the monastic robe. And now the attendant, Gokhan, will lead Taikyo and Hokyu around so that everyone can acknowledge their having received novice ordination and offer a kind of congratulation. If it takes a village to raise a child, it takes a sangha to raise a monastic. And more. So let me just say a couple words in conclusion. An old master said that the way is vast and wide. Why do you put on your robes at the sound of the bell? Why do we live the lives that we do? Why do we make the choices that we make? There will never be, the Buddhist practice, real Buddhist practice, is a long path, and in so many ways it is a kind of revolution to our ordinary way of living, certainly to cultural norms, certainly at our time. And so in that way it is, how do you devote your life to living in harmony while you, in a sense, are going across the current? And do that in a way that brings unity rather than division. So there will never be hordes and hordes of people who are engaging, dedicated practice. But there will be enough. There will never be many, many people who want to devote themselves to a monastic life. But there will be enough. And for those who choose to be a practitioner at all and to really do the practice, for those who choose to walk this particular path as a monastic, the way is vast and boundless. And you come to know why you put on your robe at the sound of the bell. And that doesn't just gladden your heart, but it gladdens the heart of everyone to have such a knowing. I feel like this codependent relationship, this beautiful interplay between lay and monastic is such an important part. In a sense, it's one of the essential aspects of what we are and what we do and what we are committed to doing. And my fervent wish is that it live into our future, that it have a life into our future, both sides, and integrated. And the only way that happens is because people are doing it. And so you are in that path of discernment. And I want it to be, continue to be, the honest path that it has been up to this point, because that's how it comes to fruition. And so I hope that this year and this next period of time is fruitful in that way, as I trust that it will be, and that it leads you to that clarity, right? That confidence. Because in that path, there are no regrets. There are no regrets. You know, part of the lie, the dangerous lie of our culture, is that we can have everything. What craziness is that? We have to make choices, right? And choices are important. They help us to clarify things. They demand of us that we actually give careful attention to the things that need careful attention. And that when we choose to let something go, that's a choice freely taken. And we choose that because it opens up something large that we want to be large. It opens a door that we want to pass through. And that's why renunciation is really a liberating practice when it's done well. So please do it well. May your lives go well.
Thanks for listening. You can find more Dharma Talks, interviews, and events at zmm.org/media. While online, please check out the Jizo Project, our multifaceted initiative to make Zen Mountain Monastery more accessible and welcoming to all. Learn about the new Jizo House building and accessibility enhancements to existing facilities that are just two aspects to this exciting endeavor. Find out more and see how you can get involved at zmm.org/JizoProject. That's JizoProject.